Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 14. I'm Karen, and I am joined in the room with Kristen.
Hi, everyone. Did last week's episode sound weird?
It did when I was editing it. You were, like, a little more distant sounding than me, and it made me sad.
Yeah. No, we're over that crap. Yeah.
By the way, COVID tests came back negative, so it was a false alarm.
Yes.
But we were trying to be safe.
Right. We were trying to be responsible adults, yeah. We did the thing.
Yeah. Now responsibility is out the window. No more.
We should be fine. We should be fine.
Yeah. You can contact us at Prophecy Podcast on Twitter, at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Tumblr, Instagram, and Facebook, and at Prophecy Radio Podcast at gmail.com. We got a cool episode today talking about all the companion books and all that kind of jazz. But before we get to that, we're going to do news and updates. And there's like a smattering of things this week to talk about. Arusha and the End of Time graphic novel is the number one new release on Amazon right now. So that's pretty exciting.
That is really cool. Yeah.
And we actually got this information from a tweet from Anu Chuhan. I'm so sorry if I'm mispronouncing that, but it's she's the person who illustrated the graphic novel.
Oh, cool.
And she's also putting out her own picture book, which is pretty cool. Hair Oil Magic is what it's called.
Nice.
So that's really exciting, and we've officially followed her on Twitter so that we can stay up to date and stuff. I like collecting all the artists that work with Rick Riordan and all the Rick Riordan Presents people because art is cool.
It is. Art is cool.
Yeah. You know what else is cool?
What?
Daughter of the Deep jumped to number one after 10 weeks on the New York Times bestsellers list. And it was probably because of Christmas. Probably, like, a whole bunch of people were buying it for Christmas or something.
I believe that. Didn't we recently... I feel like someone started maybe it was the TV announcement, too. Because didn't we get, like, a little bit of talk about the adaptation recently?
Yeah.
So it may have been something like that, too, where people are possibly. Like, oh, it's being adapted. Well,
yeah.
Then I will buy that book for my niece for Christmas.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, okay. So it may have been a nice little combo.
Yeah. Still, though, very
that
nice
exciting,
to reach
yeah.
number one. He put out a personal message to thank people because, like, Ashley does most of his Twitter now, but he got on there and thanked everybody, and it was just nice to hear from him. So
yeah, very
that's
cool.
Tiger Honor by Yoon Ha Lee has also officially been released. We'll talk more about that in the coming weeks. We also found out that Sarwat Chadha is working on draft 2 of Rise of the Chaos Goddess. He
nice.
Posted a little picture of it all printed out and stuff, and it was very exciting. I was very excited. We also got some very good words about the Celangelo book. This one took me a little bit by surprise. So this was a tweet from Rebecca Cuss, who is a senior editor at Rick Riordan Presents and Disney Hyperion. And she said, when I saw Spider-Man No Way Home, I swear this is related. When I saw Spider-Man No Way Home, I thought nothing would ever mix nostalgia with epic storytelling like this did. Make me feel that once-in-a-lifetime feel of exhilarated, heartbroken, angry, hopeful, nervous, content, which I think we've both seen the movie.
Yeah.
Completely agree.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, and then I read Celangelo, and let me just say, I was very, very wrong. That is, like, high praise.
I mean, all I can say is that makes me... Okay, I love Nico, and I'm really excited for the Celangelo book, but, like, if they're putting together, like, it's not just those two characters, really.
Yeah.
Like, you get some check-ins with some other people.
Yeah.
And, like, that's really exciting to me. Like, I think that's partially why I loved... Spoilers? Spider-Man so much?
Yeah. We can leave it at that. I think it's safe.
Yeah,
to,
no.
Yeah.
But, like,
we got some
seeing some things that you know very well come back into play is always really exciting.
Yeah.
And so if that's kind of a part of this whole Celangelo look back
yeah.
thing, I'm totally on board.
And, I mean, the book sounds like it's pretty big. Like, it's a hefty book right now, so, like, they have time to go talk to some people. So, yeah.
When you said hefty, all I could think of was the commercials when they go, hefty,
hefty, hefty, hefty, hefty. Okay, yep.
The hefty, hefty, hefty book. But unlike those commercials, it's going to be a treasure.
Yes, not trash.
Okay, I swear, I'm...
We're done, we're done. You're done. Sorry, too many TikTok noises live in my head. But anyway. Okay, so we also found out that January 4th, the Percy Jackson Television Writer's Room has started back up again. So woo-hoo! Not like crazy news or anything, but just nice to know they're back at work where they should be.
Christmas break is over. Yeah. Everyone's back to work. Which is actually kind of saying something because there's some rumors going around that some of my TV shows have been postponed. Legacies may not come back when it was supposed to because really? Of COVID.
Wow.
They're having some issues with staff and trying to make sure that they're doing things safely, so it may get postponed a little bit because of some COVID nonsense. So I'm happy to know that they're able to get back to their writing activities. I don't know if they're in person or if they're doing like a virtual thing or what, but it's nice to know that they've got it figured out.
I feel like it is mostly virtual, although I'm pretty sure that Rick had tweeted, or maybe Becky had tweeted at some point, that like they had all met up at one time, but I think it is a mostly virtual writer's room, which definitely makes it easier to collab in this current climate.
Yeah, but still very awesome.
Yeah, definitely. Lastly, we also got a tweet from Rosanna Brown, who was talking about, basically the prompt on Twitter was, tell me what your book is about, and then tell me what your book is actually about, which I think is a really cool thing to think about. And she tweeted, Sura Boateng's Guide to Vampire Hunting is about a young girl training her classmates to become monster slayers, but it's actually about the immigrant experience and carving a space for yourself when the world refuses to make one. It's also about a dog who is also a knife.
Some Riptide energy going on right there. Just saying. Just saying.
So I thought that was really cool. I really like the sound of that, and it's definitely one of those ones that I'm super excited about. By the way, as an aside, I'm currently reading In Every Generation by Kendare Blake, which is an actual Buffy book. So if you guys can't wait for The Guide to Vampire Hunting, pick that up. I'm about a quarter of the way through it, and it is very good so far if you are a fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
All the wrecks.
Yeah. Okay, let's get into the main part of our discussion this week. I am pretty excited about this. This was a lot of fun to put together. We're basically talking about all of the side books in all of Rick's series. I was going to say in the Percy Jackson world, although technically they all exist within Percy Jackson's world, but we're talking about Magnus, we're talking about Kame Chronicles and Percy Jackson, all of those. These are companion books, illustrated editions, guides to the various universes. We got everything here. And going through this, there are a lot of stories that we can talk about individually in upcoming episodes, and I think we actually are going to plan one for a few weeks from now. This is just a general overview so that we can kind of wrap our heads around, like, everything that's out there. And then if you didn't realize something existed, you can go find it. Or if you were like, oh, I really enjoyed that, maybe I'll reread it now. So first, we're going to talk about Percy Jackson and the Olympians and a couple of the books under that umbrella. The first one is The Demigod Files. Most of these are going to be in, like, the order that they came out. So Demigod Files came out in 2009. It takes place between the Battle of the Labyrinth and The Last Olympian and includes three short stories. So the first one is Percy Jackson and the Stolen Chariot, where Clarice and Percy have to track down Ares' stolen war chariot, which sounds like a good time. Now, we were just discussing before we had recorded this episode that we've read some of these. I don't think I've read, like, every single one, but I'm pretty sure I've read most of these. A lot of them I don't remember. It has been a while.
Yeah, like, I think I probably read this during my first read through, which was a very long time ago.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I have read all of these or if I remember much about them at all. So
yeah. So it'll be really good to revisit them, yeah. especially when we do it in chronological order according to like the timeline in universe.
For sure.
It's going to be really cool to do that. So yeah. So Clarice and Percy have to team up to track down Ares' stolen war chariot. You can actually read the 3-part series on Rick's blog, and I'll have links to that in the show notes. So that one's very easy to get a hold of. So. Nice. That's pretty cool. The second short story from the Demigod Files is Percy Jackson and the Bronze Dragon, where Percy and Charles Beckendorf, who we just got a good introduction today in Sea of Monsters, our chapters that we'll be reviewing, Percy and Charles Beckendorf are playing Capture the Flag when they come across a bronze dragon in the woods. Gasp! Yes, this is Festus. And Festus was created before Talia's tree was there to protect the camp. Festus was meant to help protect the camp from outside monsters and everything. This is an unnamed bronze dragon, and I think I remember reading that, like, some of the details don't perfectly match up, but, like, it's been retconned to the point where, like, you know, it's definitely Festus, and I got really excited because we have a lot of love for Festus on this podcast.
How many bronze dragons are you really going to have in one series?
Exactly.
Like, you can be like, oh, that was the starter bronze dragon.
Yeah.
Then we built Festus. Yeah. Like, really?
It was like Mach 1 and, like, you know, all those. Yeah. Yeah. So that's pretty cool. I was excited to see that. Again, completely forgot about it. So that'll be fun to revisit.
Oh, yeah.
The last short story in the Demigod Files is Percy Jackson and the Sword of Hades. It takes place between Battle of the Labyrinth and the Last Olympians, and Persephone basically tricks Percy, Talia, and Nico into retrieving the Sword of Hades from the underworld. So we got, it definitely brought memories of the movie back because yeah. of Persephone and everything. So I doubt that they like pulled from this or anything, yeah. but I'll be curious if any of the movie's imagery matches up with this short story, but I highly doubt it.
Definitely an interesting thought.
Yeah, we'll have to keep it in mind.
I just looked because I was a little curious mm-hmm. and my library does have the Demigod Files at available.
Oh,
like
okay.
I think it's an audiobook and an ebook. So
ooh.
If you're looking for some of these, maybe check your local library, see if they've either got them in e-version, so you can like download it right
yeah.
away and be like, here I go. Or they may have a physical copy from mm-hmm. way back when. So just to an option, something to consider if you really missed one of these or
yeah.
you want to get your hands on one of them, that's
and
always
they're old enough at this point that like not everybody's gonna be checking them out, so they
right.
should be very available.
I looked in at my library, both of them were available
oh, okay.
to take out, even though they were like the e copies.
Yeah.
So, like, that's always encouraging.
Yeah,
so, yeah,
definitely.
All right, the next book on our list is The Ultimate Guide, which came out in 2010. It includes trading cards, full color diagrams, maps, and a dictionary of every monster. The book tells of Percy Jackson's starting life as a half-blood, A Tour of the Underworld by Nico D'Angelo, the story of Sally Jackson's parents, and items used throughout the series.
This is a great collector's item. Like, so we have this here, and I don't remember, I must have gotten it right when it came out, and I was flipping through it again. It is so nice. It has all the colored illustrations, the trading cards, like, the artwork in the trading cards, a lot of fans, I think, like, aren't the biggest fans of them because that's the one where, like, Nico looks really weird.
yeah.
But it is nice to see, like, some of the original artwork and stuff. And just to have trading cards is really fun. And just all of the diagrams and the explanations. And it's in, like, a cool little booklet with, like, a magnet cover that shuts it. I feel like kids and giant nerds who like to collect things, this would be a really good item to add to your Rick Riordan shelf.
Not to mention a dictionary of all the monsters.
Yeah.
I will say with some of the names of the monsters, that's probably one of the things I have the hardest trouble keeping straight in the Percy Jackson books. Like, sometimes I'll forget which monster is which. Like,
yeah.
in my head, I'll be thinking it looks like this, but then I'll read the name and I'm like, wait.
Yeah, and some of the names are very close to each other,
yeah.
so it's easy to get them mixed up.
Yeah, so I'm sure that would be a really fun and useful book to have definitely on hand.
And it is small enough that it could be like a pocket guide. So if you're out hunting monsters and trying to survive that demigod life.
I was gonna say, if you ever dress as a demigod for like Halloween, you take your little like ultimate guide and be like, this is my handy guide for monsters. Yeah. Like, I'm a new demigod, I have to, you know, I need a guide to help me.
Did you know that I dressed up as a demigod once? Not that long ago, either.
I was going to say, I feel like I know this, because I feel like...
there's a picture on the internet. Do I want to mention this? Actually, it wasn't, like, a whole lot. I had a Camp Half-Blood shirt, and I think I was carrying... I think I was Leo, because I was carrying a hammer and a screwdriver. Nice. So I think I was pretending to be Leo Valdez. So that was... It's funny that I chose him. I think it was a last-minute thing. Deirdre was Katniss Everdeen, and Nicole was somebody. Kayla was a mime.
And I was going to say, I remember Deirdre and Katniss. Like, I remember you talking about Deirdre playing Katniss. So, I think I remember.
And Nicole had her little teacup chihuahua, and she put a little TY Beanie heart tag on it so that it looked like a TY.
A Beanie Baby.
So cute.
I just watched that documentary, by the way.
Oh,
the Beanie Babies.
I didn't know there was a documentary.
There's a documentary about the Beanie Baby craze from the 90s, and it's kind of insane. And
I want to watch it.
It ended with, like, some YouTube videos about how people are starting to get back into it. And
no!
I was like, no!
Oh, my God. I definitely still have some of my Beanie Babies.
Oh, I still have some.
Yeah.
I don't know where they are at this exact moment, but they exist in my life. Yeah. I know this.
Maybe if enough people want to see that picture, I'll post it, but I'll have to get permission from everybody if I do.
And if not, maybe sometime down the line we can bring it back up and see if there's any more.
I can't remember what Nicole was. I'm sorry, Nicole. I love you. She's never going to listen to this podcast. Anyway, okay. Is it my turn? Yes. Percy Jackson and the Singer Apollo came out in 2013. This is a short story published in Guy's Read Other Worlds. It's also in the paperback version of The Hidden Oracle from the Trials of Apollo series. Percy is celebrating Grover's birthday, and Apollo shows up to ask for a little favor. And, of course, everything goes sideways.
I was going to say, I know I read this one because I remember the whole Apollo thingy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been a while, so I don't remember all the details, but I know I read that one. The next one on our list is Percy Jackson and the Greek Gods, which, if you're trying to track it down in your brain, it's that giant coffee table book that, like, has all the really pretty illustrations in it, which were done by John Rocco, who we all know and love. And Percy gives his own take on the Greek myth, so it's a little more from Percy's perspective. It doesn't necessarily, like, add a ton to the story.
No, I think it's pretty much just, like, the actual Greek mythology, but just, like, Percy's voice telling the story.
Which is cool all on its own. Just to kind of have a voice and a perspective we kind of know and love.
Yeah, and tell probably you about these. A little easier for kids to, like, get into the real myths and stuff.
Yeah. So that came out in 2014. And kind of a companion to that, there's Percy Jackson and the Greek Heroes, which came out in 2015, was also illustrated by John Rocco, and it's Percy giving his own take on the Greek myths from, like, the hero perspective.
Right.
The first book was all about the gods. Mm-hmm. The second one is all about the heroes, so a lot of them are demigods or
Perseus, mortals. Hercules, like, all of those, Achilles,
Yeah.
So that's, those are really, really pretty, and they're fun to flip through, and also just to, like, keep on your coffee table, and even if people don't really know anything about Percy Jackson, I feel like it's just a nice thing to have out for guests.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of that lovely bridge, because it's about the actual Greek myths, but it's told from Percy's perspective, so, like, it would give you, like, a couple of details about this Greek god or this Greek hero.
Yeah, it has a little bit of his sass in it.
Yeah, like, it kind of merges the gap. So if you have someone in your life who's, like, a big Greek fan but hasn't read Percy, which I don't know who those people are.
Who are you?
like, that would be a fun kind of way to bridge the gap a little bit.
Then we have Camp Half-Blood Confidential, which came out in 2017. This is basically just background facts about Camp Half-Blood. This one's a little less sparkly than the Ultimate Guide, but it's still got some really good information in there and is another, like, small, nice book to just, like, carry around if you want to keep it all fresh in your mind. I don't know. Do people do that? I feel like I would have done that when I was younger, just to feel like I was pretending to be a demigod or something. Keep it in my backpack. We also have the Percy Jackson coloring book, which came out in 2017, which I think I also have around here somewhere. I'm pretty sure I do. It's a coloring book, and the art was by Keith Robinson. It's pretty cool and fun to add to your collection. I don't think I've ever colored anything in it, though.
It's just on the shelf, like, being guarded.
Maybe I'll have to do that one day and then post it on the Instagram or something.
Yeah. Always makes a good gift or whatever for a Percy Jackson fan, so it's good to know they're out there.
Yeah.
The last in our Percy Jackson section is the Lightning Thief Illustrated Edition, which came out in 2018. It's the first book, but it's illustrated by John Brocco. It's, if you have any of those Harry Potter illustrated editions, this is very reminiscent of that. And it's got some gorgeous illustrations. It's a little bit of a merging between The Lightning Thief and, like, Percy Jackson's Greek Gods, like, and the Greek Gods right. ones, where it's a little bit bigger. You've got whole pages full of, you know, illustration of all the different scenes and stuff. So definitely worth checking out if you're a huge fan of the book. On April 27th of 2021, so just about, like, 8 months ago, John Rocco said that there weren't any current plans to do more of these, which is really sad.
It is super sad.
But with rejuvenated interest with the TV show, I would not be, like, shocked if they started batting this around again. Like, if John's not too busy and wants to get back into it, like, I can't imagine people wouldn't be looking for that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, you never know. Right now, we can't plan on it, but you just never know. The future is mysterious and
it is.
Full of prophecies.
It is. The tweet specifically says, "Thanks so much for sharing about the illustrated Lightning Thief. Right now, there are no plans to create an illustrated Sea of Monsters, but who knows, maybe that will change. Cheers." So even he seems a little bit hopeful about it.
That's cool.
And I would imagine, like you said, especially with the TV show coming up, like, there's going to be renewed interest in everything. And I think it would be a little silly if they wasted this opportunity to give us more of those, because I would buy them in a heartbeat, like, no question. John Rocco's art for Percy Jackson is classic, and a lot of people really, really love his illustrations. I can't imagine anybody saying, "Nah, we're good. We don't want any more."
Especially, like, Disney. Like, "Nah, we don't want the money. You guys can keep it."
Like, I mean, they could sell prints of it in the Disney store and all that kind of stuff, so I feel like it would just be really smart to do that.
And in my dream world, where the Percy Jackson TV show takes off and becomes so big that they have to add a Percy Jackson world to Disney World.
Oh, Kristen, you can't just say those things with no warning. Now that's all I want. That never occurred to me.
It would have to take off, but then when they add that and they have their own shops, then they can use John Rocco's art all over the place and, like, you know.
This is too much. I'm overwhelmed with emotion.
Here I am just throwing willy-nilly ideas out into the world.
You can't just say those things.
But yeah, so, you know, it's a
thing. We really dream big on this podcast. The show isn't even officially greenlit yet.
Dreams.
And we're like, you know what? Disney World.
It's going to be big enough.
Percy Jackson Land.
It's going to be big enough. I'm just saying, it's going to be big enough.
Oh, they have
if
to
Cars
sell,
has its own land.
They'd have
Percy
to sell
Jackson's
blue food in the cafeteria.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Maybe this should be its own episode. I'm going to write that down after we're done here. Okay. Focus.
Look forward to that. Anyway, moving on.
So we have the Heroes of Olympus umbrella is next. And the first one there is the Demigod Diaries, which came out in 2012. And this one has four short stories. The first short story is The Diary of Luke Castellan. And this one is about Luke and Talia's adventures 5 years prior to the Lightning Thief as they meet Halcyon Green, son of Apollo, and get a prophecy that they're really not going to like. This is probably the short story I remember the most and also the one most relevant to what we're talking about right now. So I think this is the one we'll probably jump into first somewhere here in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, it's a good one because we get to see Talia and it's fun. And then we have Percy Jackson and the Staff of Hermes. This takes place between the Last Olympian and the Lost Hero, so it bridges the gap between Percy Jackson and the Olympians and the Heroes of Olympus. And Annabeth and Percy go on an unfortunate date and have to track down Hermes' staff.
I remember this one.
Do you?
I distinctly remember something about that staff. Yeah. I definitely read this
I one. Think Hera takes place in this one. Mm-hmm. Like, Hera has a prominent role, so... Yeah,
that sounds about right.
Then we have Leo Valdez and the quest for Buford between the Lost Hero and the Son of Neptune. Leo, Jason, and Piper have to face off against the Maenads, the maniac followers of Dionysus. So, that's... They're crazy ones. If you know anything about... You know,
I mean, Mr. D's nuts.
But. Yeah, Bacchus and Bacchanalia and all of that. If you know what that means, they're a little intense.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
And then we have The Son of Magic, which is the fourth one here. This was written by Rick's son, Haley. It's his debut as a writer, so that's pretty exciting. It follows a mortal man as he becomes involved in a conflict between two children of Hecate. So...
I definitely remember this one,
too. Do you? I know I've read it. I was like, I feel like I'm not sure I remember it. So that'll be really exciting for me to revisit.
Yeah, for sure. The next book on our Happy Hit Parade is The Demigods of Olympus, which came out in 2015. This is an interactive and customizable adventure story. It's basically an app that allowed you to choose your own adventure, and, like, I'm sure it had all kinds of questions, mm-hmm. like, throughout the thing. But, so I don't know if it actually exists in any sort of paper form, but you may be able to find it.
I think it's just an app. I don't know if it's still up to date or anything. I actually never did this. I think I downloaded it, but... I don't remember actually going through this story at all. So if anybody has any strong feelings about this, let us know, because I definitely remember when it came out, but I wasn't really sure basically what it was like, and then I think I forgot about it soon after. I'm so sorry.
I'm not sure this is still in the Apple app store. Okay. Like, I don't see it in there.
Yeah.
So it may be hard to get your hands on these days.
Yeah.
Just a heads up. I don't want you guys looking for something that may not be easy to find.
Yeah. Okay, so now we're jumping to the Kane Chronicles, which, of course, is the Egyptian mythology series that Rick wrote. The first book here is The Survival Guide, which is from 2012, and it was basically the same thing as The Ultimate Guide, but for the Kanes and for Egyptian mythology. So if you really liked how the other one looked and what was involved with that, the cards, you know, the binding, all that kind of stuff, you can get that for the Kane Chronicles story. Which, why didn't we get this for Magnus? Because...
Karen's gonna lodge a formal complaint.
Justice for Magnus Chase.
Did you hear that, Rick? I'm just kidding. I know you have plenty on your plate. Yeah. I'm totally teasing. This is just a joke. Okay, moving on. The next book is The Brooklyn House Magician's Manual, which came out in 2018. It's a guidebook for magicians and Egyptian gods. That's about all. I haven't read the Kane Chronicles, so I honestly couldn't tell you exactly what this is.
Yeah, I think this one was similar to the other guidebook that was, like, less exciting than the Ultimate Guide.
Oh, gotcha, yeah. Like, there was the Ultimate Guide, and then there was, like,
the Confidential. Yeah. Oh, no, maybe not. Maybe this one's different. Because the Confidential and the one for Heroes of Olympus... Oh, maybe it is. There's so many to keep track of. But either way, it's... You know, again, good if you're trying to memorize the Egyptian gods and be more familiar with them. Because the Greek gods are a little bit easier for us to remember, because I think it's a little more common for us to learn those in school. But
I was going to say, honestly, the front of this kind of looks like the Demigod Diaries type art.
It is, yeah, it's very similar
but
to...
But it's definitely more of a guide to, like, the Egyptian gods and stuff. So yeah. It's a little bit of a mix, I think, but yeah. Definitely useful if you're reading Kane Chronicles, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Which I will need to do sometime very soon, I'm sorry.
I mean, you're gonna have no choice eventually.
I have
eventually.
So much reading to do.
I know, I do feel bad, but...
It's alright, I'll catch up.
Yeah, we're gonna have to tackle Kane Chronicles probably sooner rather than later, so that'll be interesting. And that's actually a perfect segue into our next section, because the next section is the Demigods and Magicians book, which is a crossover between Percy Jackson and the Kane Chronicles. This one has three short stories in it. These I vividly remember, I think, because this was like, oh my god, they exist in the same world. Like, it was a very big deal when it came out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So the first one is The Son of Sobek in 2013, where Carter is swallowed by a crocodile, but Percy saves him. Then they team up to defeat the Son of Sobek. In The Staff of Serapis in 2014, Annabeth tries to fight off a wolf-lion monster and is saved by Sadie Kane. They team up to defeat Serapis, who wants to destroy both the Greek and Egyptian pantheons. That is a lofty goal. That is somebody who is like, you know what, I'm shooting for the moon.
It makes sense that it's Annabeth.
Yeah, exactly.
Overachiever.
And the third short story is The Crown of Ptolemy in 2015, where Percy, Annabeth, Sadie, and Carter team up to defeat Setna, who is like a god, an Egyptian god, I think.
I can like see the covers of these. Like, I don't know if I ever read them because I didn't know the Kane Chronicles and I had planned to read the Kane Chronicles book. So I think I'm pretty sure I like just kept saying like, I will get to these eventually. But I can like see the covers for some of them because I remember like The Crown of Ptolemy. Like, I'm like, yeah, I know what that, I know what that looks like.
Yeah.
So it sounds familiar even though I know I haven't read it because I knew I'd be lost if I was trying to read stuff about Sadie and them that I don't really know yet.
These are very exciting because, again, of the crossover aspect of it and just the fact that they exist within the same world. And this was prior to Magnus, where Magnus and Annabeth are cousins. So I remember, you know, I like the Kane Chronicles, but it never stuck to me like Percy Jackson did. But this made that series like even more exciting because, you know, okay, both of these pantheons exist in the same world. Like, how does that work? And then we've talked about it a million times, but my love for shared universes and stuff, like, it just gets my mind going, and I can't wait. I wish we could have more of this kind of stuff. It would be really cool.
I was going to say, just thinking about, like, shared universes, like, there aren't a lot of, like, kids' books where an author writes, like, two or three series and they all coexist.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of authors, they hit one really big series and then they just kind of, you know, don't write much more, or they write more but they do it under another pseudonym or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool that he has written so many different series and that they can coexist and that can link all kinds of characters and make so many things possible. So that's just really cool.
One of my biggest wish lists for the Percy Jackson universe is a crossover novel series where you have Percy and Annabeth, Sadie and Carter, you have Magnus and Alex, like, all together having to fight, like, a Thanos-style, like, overlord bad guy or something. I would do anything to get that. It would probably be very difficult to shove everything into even, like, three or five books. But, I would live for something like that.
It would be not the Riordan Cinematic Universe, but it would be the Riordan
Literary Universe?
Literary Universe.
The RLU.
Right? That's a good name.
It is kind of a good name.
And he could just write a combined series about all the different...
But see, then it'd be hard because then you also have the Heroes of Olympus series and you have all of them.
Oh, right. Oh,
Leo and Piper and, well, not some of them. Some of them are gone.
All right, we're just moving on because Karen's trying to bring the place down today. All right. The next umbrella that we're going to talk about is Magnus Chasing the Gods of Asgard. How did I end up getting this one? Because this is like your baby.
It is. You love it too, though.
I do quite enjoy Magnus Chase, but I know it's your baby, so I'm kind of shocked. Anyway, moving on. The first book under the Magnus Chase umbrella is Hotel Valhalla, which is a guide to the Norse worlds, which is very similar to some of the handbooks we've gotten already. This is a handbook for new and hair... I've never gotten this word down. And Harriar.
I think that was right.
Okay.
Yeah.
A handbook for new and Harriar that goes over various myths and deities and is an introduction to some of the Norse gods that probably weren't even used in Magnus Chase, but that's good to know. And that is a very complicated history. With other Norse things going on, there's a lot that goes on in the Norse god, like, mythology. So I would 100% definitely
I would need the handbook.
Yeah, for sure. There's also a Magnus Chase coloring book, which came out in 2018. And like the Percy one, this the art was also done by Keith Robinson. And it's a coloring book. Yay.
Yeah, it's super fun. Nice and fun.
So, yeah, no, if you're a fan of Magnus, I'm sure that would be really exciting to see some of those things brought to life, the moments and whatnot.
Yeah, I don't know if I have this one.
Oh, no.
I might have to find it.
Yeah, that might be. Karen puts that on her must-find list.
Yeah. Then we have Nine from the Nine Worlds, which came out in 2018, and this is basically nine short stories, each narrated by a different character from the Magnus Chase and the Gods of Asgard series, and it just runs through, you know, various stories, various worlds. You get a little bit of everything in these, and I remember really enjoying this book and being very excited when it came out.
The next umbrella we're going to kind of jump into is Trials of Apollo. There's only one companion book for this, but it is still a pretty new series, so there's always room for maybe some extra stuff down the line.
Yeah, because some of those other ones didn't come out till years later.
Right, yeah. Never say never. Yes, Camp Jupiter Classified, which came out in 2020, so it did just come out 2 years ago.
Yeah.
It's structured as a diary that tells the story of Claudia, a legacy of Mercury and Probatio in the fourth cohort. So, definitely tells of the Camp Jupiter world, and we all know how important that is, and we definitely got more of that in Trials of Apollo, so very appropriate for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So, last, wow, I feel like, did we do a good job running through all of these? I'm sorry, I know we're not done yet, but like, I just got very excited.
Because this last group is pretty quick.
Yeah, it is. So, basically, there are graphic novels for three of the main book series that Rick has written. So first we have Percy Jackson and the Olympians, and all five of those books are out. What I find really interesting is the years that they came out. So Lightning Thief came out in 2010, Sea of Monsters and Titan's Curse came out in 2013, Battle of the Labyrinth came out in 2018, and The Last Olympian came out in 2019. So that wasn't that long ago. Mm-hmm. It really took them 9 years to do the graphic novels.
That is very interesting.
Yeah, and then, so, Kane Chronicles, you have all three of those. Red Pyramid came out in 2012, Throne of Fire in 2015, and Serpent Shadow in 2017. Oh, I see, I think they were, like, they were going opposite. Yeah, because then you have Heroes of Olympus, Lost Hero was in 2014, and Son of Neptune was in 2017. So
you got one every year, but they were merging all three.
They were different, yeah. So that makes a lot more sense. But as you'll have noticed, we only have two of the five books in the Heroes of Olympus series, and there's no word on if this series will be finished, but if we keep talking about it and we keep showing our interest, then there's a possibility, and again, as the show comes out, I think that interest is going to skyrocket, and especially graphic novels for kids who like the show, but can't necessarily sit down and read a book, like, this is going to be huge for them.
Well, and I think graphic novels are having a real renaissance for, like, YA and middle grade audiences. Like, I think kids are finding it easy to get into those stories, and then if you like the graphic novels, like, then you get into reading the story. Like, it's a different medium. Like, it might be the same story, but reading the actual text of something you already kind of have visuals for in the graphic novel is a totally different experience. So I can see that being a really good way to kind of, like, keep kids, you know, always discovering the new ones. Also, I just kind of noticed this. The last one of these that came out was The Last Olympian in 2019, which was right before the pandemic.
Yeah.
So, like, there's a possibility that maybe things just got off track because of all the craziness that's gone on. So maybe, hopefully, we'll see some more action with these coming up. But yeah, just basically stay active, let them know you want it, and we may see them, you know?
Yeah, hopefully.
And that pretty much wraps up our main discussion for today.
I'm looking at the timestamp, and I'm like, wow, we're at 40 minutes.
We kept moving.
Was really good. Excited.
Our dream is that these episodes aren't too long, so you guys can just listen and enjoy them and not worry, but sometimes we get a little chatty.
Yeah, we get a little excited. You know, for living together and seeing each other every day, we still have a lot to say to each other.
We really do. Well, we don't spend all day talking about Percy Jackson. I know.
That's true.
Just a little behind the
don't
magic.
Don't tell them that.
We're ruining the magic.
Oh my gosh.
But like, so when we sit down and we like have designated time to like dive into it.
We're not allowed to have other interests.
Nope,
Kristen.
No other interests. Never.
It's Percy Jackson or death.
Besides the fact that we mention Harry Potter in like every
episode.
Oops, my bad. Anyway, let's move on now, and we'll do our chapter reviews. The we were talking about chapters 5 and 6 this week, which is chapter 5, I Get a New Cabin Mate, is the first chapter. And our recap reads as such. Camp Half-Blood looks the same, but somehow different. It may be the occasional scorch mark and campers running around doing maintenance and chores rather than having fun, but Camp Half-Blood is not its usual charming yet terrifying self. Chiron has been fired, and he's going to hang with his kin in the Everglades until things get sorted out.
That was really funny. Like, I know that's literally what happens, but, like, when you just write it out like that, it just really made me laugh.
That's what I'm here for. That's what I'm here for. Godspeed on your journey, man. Perseids, Annabeth, and Tyson are introduced to the new camp director, Tantalus, who has reinstituted chariot races rather than dedicating time to keeping the camp safe. Even Clarice thinks this guy's a little off his rocker. Tantalus goes on to insult Tyson in an attempt to figure out where he can sleep, but then we see a shiny green trident glowing over his head. Congratulations, Percy Jackson. It's a brother. Well, a half-brother.
I'm so glad I don't read these before we record, because they're really funny.
I do my best. I try. So, yeah, this is kind of another big chapter, just basically because we're getting into Camp Half-Blood and figuring out what the hell's been going on.
Yeah, yeah.
At the very beginning of this chapter, Percy describes, like, he's trying to give everybody an idea of what Camp Half-Blood feels like.
Mm-hmm.
Because he walks in, and it's not the same. It's the same. The buildings are still there. The kids are still there. You know, it looks like it should be Camp Half-Blood. But nobody's, like, you know, sword fighting for training. Like, nobody's talking, you know, at the beach talking to the spirits and stuff. Like, they're all focused and trying to, you know, they just took down these bulls, so, like, they're trying to clean up from that and help people who are hurt from that and all that. So it's a very different atmosphere. And the way he talks about it, it speaks to my soul, because he describes it as, like, when someone else cleans your room or, like, cleans something and suddenly you can't find anything.
Yep.
And that is why even though my mother is like, I can come and help you clean, I'm like, no, like, you can't. I love you,
you'll
but
do
no.
it wrong, Mom.
Because I will never know where anything is. It might be chaos in my room and in my life, but I know where everything is.
Yeah.
So I loved that as a description. It just made it really clear to me what he was trying to get across.
I feel like that's very much like, I don't know, when I go home to visit my mom, sometimes she'll, like, go through my suitcase and, like, hang my clothes up, and I'm like, no, why did you do that? You did that wrong. Like, the teenager in me comes out. I'm like, I wouldn't have hung them up like that. I'm sorry. I love my mom so much, but it's like, I guess because when you become an adult, and especially for Percy, like, going to camp, he is being more independent. He's away from his mom, and you kind of just want things how you want them, and when they're not that way, and especially with everything else falling apart around him, you want that sense of control, and Camp Half-Blood was a safe space, and all of a sudden, it's not safe anymore.
Yeah.
Like, literally.
Truly, truly and completely not safe. But yeah, so that just really spoke to me, and I had to make sure to bring that up.
Yeah.
But the next thing we should definitely talk about is our goodbye to Chiron, which I put in all caps for now, because, you know, he can't be gone forever.
He'll be back.
Right?
Like, yeah.
He's Chiron. He can't be gone forever. But yeah, like, fired.
Just gone.
Just told to
Had
Vamoose.
To blame somebody.
And I did like that we got kind of a mini explanation of, but you're only immortal as long as you're around to train heroes. Like,
yeah,
what does this mean? Like, are you going to die? Did they take away your immortality? Like, are you now vulnerable? Like, you can see Annabeth, like, kind of panics a little bit. And he basically just says, like, I don't know anything. For now, I'm going to go. And
he's super chill about it.
Right? Like, he's so calm.
Yeah.
Until he gets to, like, Percy, and he's like, you stay here. Like, that's the only time when he seems to get really intense. But the rest of the time, he's trying to just keep Annabeth calm because he knows she's about to, like, lose it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like, we don't necessarily know what's in the cards for Chiron coming up, but we can all hope in.
Yeah. I really like this aspect of the book and other series that do this, because when we get into the Heroes of Olympus series and you see how the gods shift between their Greek personas and the Roman personas, depending on how people are worshiping them and stuff like that. I think American Gods did this too, where like, they basically draw power from people worshiping them, and as people forget about them, their power drains, and it's why, like, new gods can pop up and old gods die and everything. I find that part of the book so fascinating to think about, because in the Percy Jackson series, the gods are, like, all-powerful, you know, they know so much, they can kill anybody they want to, do anything they want to do, but at the same time, they still rely on the general population, on mortals, to keep them alive, and it's a really interesting balance to have to think about that.
Especially considering the majority of mortals, like, even in this series, don't necessarily believe in the Greek gods.
Right.
But they know of them, and have enough of it in their heads all the time that, like, they have enough power to stay in power.
Right.
It's not until they are forgotten that they start to kind of fizzle away and lose their strength.
And it makes you think about all of the art and architecture that we have in the United States that are based off of Greek and Roman art and architecture, and how that really, you know, he set the books in the United States because that's supposed to be the seat of the power for the West. And just the fact that, like, when people came over here, they built those monuments in the art of the classics, the Greek and Roman, and the fact that that helps carry on their power is just, like, it's so cool. I love it. It's so,
like,
much.
If you think about, like, Washington, D.C., and you think about, like, the Supreme Court, like, it's got all those columns, and it's in, like, this giant, you know, it kind of looks like almost the Pantheon, like, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, just using that architecture keeps it alive for people, and they keep seeing it.
And that even works for the Kane Chronicles because of, I almost said Mount Rushmore, the Washington Monument. Two very different things.
The obelisk.
Yeah, yeah. We have a ton of those around here, and, you know, all the pyramids you see on various things, the dollar bill and all of that kind of stuff. Like, it really,
it does, like, feed into
so
it.
It's so smart, and I love it.
God, Rick, you're so smart. Okay. Let's keep moving, though. We also met Tantalus in this episode, in this chapter.
Yeah.
So, I think my biggest thing is he just ignorant and happy to not be doing his other thing, or is he purposely trying to get the camp destroyed?
I'm gonna say a little of the first one and a lot of the second one. Okay. I feel like he is definitely up to no good, but I feel like he's gotta enjoy this more than he enjoys being down in the underworld and being tortured and stuff like that, so.
Because we learn what his torture is down in the underworld. Do I remember exactly what it is?
It's, he has to sit beneath a tree on the edge of a lake, and he can't eat or drink anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, so it's, I mean, at least this way he gets to talk to, like, non-shades and gets to, like, you know, torture other people, really.
Yeah. And I think there's, I don't know if it's Mr. D just kind of, like, feeding into it, but he has this hope that maybe the curse will fade, like, maybe being away from the underworld, the curse might fade a little bit.
I don't know. I feel like he kind of said that on purpose, because I really got the feeling that Mr. D was reveling in the fact that Tantalus's curse is way worse than his. Like,
at least he gets Diet Coke.
Yeah, he pretty much is the same person. He just can't drink, which, you know,
poor Mr. D.
Yeah, sucks for him. But everything else, he's pretty much the same. And Tantalus, you know, I feel like Mr. D is just like, ha, you have it worse than me. So
finally.
Yeah, I feel like he was trying to give him false hope by saying, maybe it'll fade in a couple of days. It's not going to fade in a couple of days.
They're not going to forget. Like, yeah. Sorry, dude. Just because you're here doesn't mean, yeah, no, not at all. We should probably also talk about Tyson.
We should, because I would like people to stop being mean to him. It's really starting to upset me.
I mean, and there's some, like, really cruel things that Tantalus says and that, like, get said because of what Tantalus is doing by other kids and whatever.
And they're all laughing at him, and, like the majority of them are laughing at him.
And part of me is glad that Tyson doesn't seem to understand that they're all mocking him all the time. But, like, even if he doesn't quite get it, you know, at some level, he kind of probably gets it.
He does, because
otherwise,
yeah,
he wouldn't feel as run down about things as he already, you can see on, you know, on his face,
yeah,
which we can't see his face. But, like, you can kind of feel it in the way that he write it, the way that Rick writes Tyson's character. Like, he is a little run down. Like, the world doesn't treat him well because of what he is, and they don't even know what he is. Like, in the real world, they see him as something else. But, like, he doesn't feel get treated well in either world,
mm-hmm,
which is,
yeah,
awful.
Yeah, it is. There's... Tyson is such... I don't think he's a complicated character because he's actually, like, very straightforward in the kind of person that he is, which I love that about him. I think that's actually, like, one of his strengths as a character. But the world he lives in makes his existence complicated, and that is very interesting to me, too. But it also makes me really sad because he's so nice. If people would just give him a chance and talk to him.
Yeah. When he gets claimed, mm-hmm, by Poseidon, the whole camp goes dead silent. And considering that every other time they've immediately found a way to kind of, like, make it something to mock, it's like the whole camp took a second and went, he got claimed by Poseidon, mm-hmm, and I still haven't been claimed by my dad.
Yeah.
Or I haven't been claimed yet, and, like, you know, like, there's all... I think there was a moment of that, especially for people who maybe stay in Hermes' cabin.
Right.
That aren't... Yeah, stay in Hermes' cabin that aren't Hermes' kids. I definitely think there's a bit of that jealousy, mm-hmm, that's, like... How is Poseidon claiming this guy?
Yeah.
Because they all think Tyson is lesser than.
And, right.
Yeah. So, but then, of course, Tantalus jumps in.
Yeah. I think that actually makes a lot of sense, and I didn't really think about that before, about them being jealous, but it does make sense because children of the Big Three are supposed to be more powerful than the other demigods, and if Tyson is being claimed by Poseidon as his son, you know, yes, he's a Cyclops, so it's not really... He's not a demigod in the sense that he's half human, half,
right,
god, but it's still... It's a power move.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... You know, Tyson doesn't know what it means necessarily, and he's not going to shove it in people's faces, but other people understand the importance of that moment.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if there is a little jealousy there.
And we know in the next chapter, like, it kind of complicates Percy's life a little,
yeah,
bit. But honestly, it warms me to Poseidon. I don't remember if he did this for nefarious reasons, and I'm sure we'll get to that later, because I'm sure Percy's going to have words for his dad. but I don't quite remember, but it makes me feel like, okay, Poseidon, like, you just earned some brownie points in my world, because Tyson had nothing, and now he's been claimed, and he has a brother, like, he has a cabin, he has a place to be,
yeah,
and belong, and that is very, very powerful, so it made me feel warm and fuzzies for Poseidon,
yeah,
for a few minutes there.
You know who I felt warm and fuzzies for that, yeah, I wasn't expecting? Clarice.
Yeah.
That was really surprising because not that she isn't still very much herself and still kind of a bully, but she was way more interested in protecting the camp, and she even started to admit that she didn't beat the bulls on her own. Like, she wasn't really out there for glory. I think that as much as she loves fighting and being a part of the war and everything, she's also very serious about her duties as a soldier and a leader. And even if she doesn't want to give Percy credit necessarily, she didn't want to take it away from her own, you know, men and women.
Yeah.
So, like, I was like, okay, Clarice, I see you.
Yeah, because Tantalus wants Percy to get exactly zero of the credit. Same,
yeah,
with Tyson. Doesn't,
yeah,
want to give Tyson any credit either. So all of the credit goes to Clarice in Tantalus's eyes. But, yeah, even Clarice isn't quite on board, which...
Is pretty cool.
It's good news.
One last thing about Tantalus, too, is that he decides to start up the chariot races. And they talk about how in the past they were discontinued because it led to 3 deaths and something like 26 maimings or something like that. And I know that this is, you know, just supposed to be a throwaway line or whatever. But if you really think about it, the fact that the chariot races led to 3 deaths, like, they say these things so casually. But can you imagine witnessing your fellow campers dying during training and how, like, it's such a waste. Like, I know that they joked about it both in the movie and throughout the books in terms of, like, yeah, you know, we're going to be sword fighting now. Like, try not to get... Or, like, capture the flag. Like, try not to kill anybody. What do you mean, try not to kill anybody? Like,
right.
I realize that they have to practice with real weapons, but... You shouldn't be dying during your training exercises.
Right? Like, that really shouldn't be.
You are too cavalier about this.
Especially when you've got a bunch of 12 and 13.
I was just
going to
say that, yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. I mean, you think about some of these other supernatural shows, and, like, when you get into, like, vampires and werewolves, and, like, mm-hmm. people die all the time, and they make death feel a little cavalier, because,
yeah.
especially human death, like, they start to make it feel really cavalier. But, like, yeah, if you're thinking about it in terms of Percy, like, these are kids, and that would be pretty traumatizing, like,
yeah.
to see your fellow camper go down on... the chariot race and not get up. Like, that, yeah, I can't even imagine. That would be definitely a scar, for sure. And last but not least, I just wanted to mention that we do meet Charles Beckendorf.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Whose name you may have heard earlier in this podcast.
Yeah. I was pretty excited about this just because I didn't really remember his role exactly, and it was nice to, like, meet him again, and I'm actually really excited about his short story and just, like, seeing more of that. But, yeah, I'm... Yeah, it's cool.
And this is basically our first mention of Hephaestus, I think, too. And, like, starting to get into who Hephaestus is.
Yeah,
as a Greek god.
I think they mentioned him in the first book because of the Aphrodite Ares thing.
Right,
but,
yep.
like, it was, you know...
It's brief.
Yeah, like, a paragraph, maybe.
Yeah, so this is another mention where, you know, because we know Hephaestus comes into play.
Yeah.
A little bit. Just
yeah.
Just a teeny bit. So it's, you know, we're getting another mention. We're kind of getting an idea of what... one of Hephaestus's demigod children does, like, he, you
mm-hmm.
know, and that's just nice to kind of get a touch
yeah.
on as we move forward.
And Charles Beckendorf seems really cool. Like, I would definitely want to be friends with him.
Right?
Like, blacksmith, and he seems to be one of the few people who doesn't mind having Tyson around because we, you know, we'll later learn that, like, he's worked with Cyclops before because
yeah.
His father does, and... He seems like somebody who has a good head on his shoulders and isn't, you know, as either immature or mean-spirited as some of the other kids. So I can definitely get behind that.
Agreed. All right. So that brings us to our favorite quotes. And I'm going to go first because mine's really short. Mine is every time Tyson said, "What's that?" Because my little brothers used to drive me crazy with either, "What's that?" or "Why?" or "Tell me what that is." Or, what, you know, like they, oh my gosh, they used to do it all the time. So when Tyson got into his, "What's that?" and Percy's like, "That's the dining cabin." Like, it was cracking me up
because
yeah. I was like, I know what Percy's feeling right
yeah.
now.
It was really cute, and it just... Every time Tyson speaks, it endears me more to him, so
yeah.
I loved that.
Agreed. Karen, what was your favorite quote?
My favorite quote was when Percy was thinking about Poseidon potentially turning him into something like Zeus turned Talia into the tree. And it's like, you know, if I'm on the edge of death, like, what's Poseidon going to do to me? And he says, "I had nightmares about what Poseidon might turn me into if I were ever on the verge of death. Plankton, maybe. Or a floating patch of kelp." And especially the, like, plankton maybe part just really made me laugh. I loved it.
I've recently been watching a lot of, like, deep sea thing. And so this, like, spoke to me. I was like, oh my god, plankton. Like, don't be plankton. They get eaten by everything. You don't want to be plankton.
Maybe you're plankton from SpongeBob. Would that be better or worse? Plankton's not... Isn't plankton not a good guy?
No. I don't think it's plankton, is it?
Yeah, plankton. Sheldon J. Plankton.
Oh, yeah, okay. I was going to say, I thought
is the owner of the Chum Bucket and the main antagonist of the YouTube parody... Oh, YouTube parody animation. Wait, is he not real? Wait a second. Now I have to figure this out. SpongeBobia. That's the encyclopedia for SpongeBob. No, I'm pretty sure he's real. He's in the show. Yeah, because he owns the thing and he's mean.
He's every SpongeBob mean meme that
we've ever seen. He's one of the 10 main characters of the SpongeBob SquarePants franchise. Okay, I'm sorry. That was the weirdest tangent
Karen we might have gone. Karen had to prove that
that my mind knows things. I'm smart.
You're very smart.
Brain works.
Okay. Let's keep moving. Favorite moments from this one? I'll go first again. Mine was Tyson getting claimed by Poseidon. I already kind of talked about this, but I like that Poseidon sent an egregious middle finger to Tantalus and all the other judgmental people in camp.
It was excellent timing.
Right? Like, it's like they're literally ragging on him and, you know, and it just pops up above his head and everyone goes silent and I'm like, yeah! Like, it's, you know, it's very well timed by Poseidon. So that's my favorite moment.
Yeah.
Karen, what was yours?
Mine's sort of related because it's also Tyson, but it's every time Percy is mad on Tyson's behalf. Just again, I just really love that he's sticking up for him and he's angry that everybody else is being so mean because they're being so mean.
They are being really mean. Okay, so that wraps up chapter 5, and we'll move right along to chapter 6, Demon Pigeon's Attack. Having Tyson as Percy's plus one isn't exactly a great thing. Percy's still young, and everyone is using it as something to mock him about, forgetting all about his first summer's heroics. Not to mention, Tyson is not exactly a low-maintenance house guest. Annabeth and Percy talk about entering the chariot race together, but then have a little tiff and go their separate ways. Percy goes on to have a chat with Grover, a little, dream chat
thing.
I don't remember the actual term for
it. Emotion link?
Emotional bond link. Yeah, link.
Yeah, something like that.
Percy has
empathy link.
Empathy link.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Karen gets credit.
Brain
she
works.
Gets the points. You sounded like Tyson. Brain works. That's exactly what Tyson would say. Percy has a chat with Grover and is now linked, so if Grover dies, Percy's in some serious trouble, too.
Yeah. Whoops.
Nice job, Grover.
Not great, Bob.
Oh, and there was a chariot race that ended in complete disaster, and it wasn't entirely Tantalus' fault. Yet. So, brother/half-brother Tyson.
Yeah. Exciting. I think it's good. I think it's sweet. I especially like their bond throughout the series, so it's really cool to come back to the beginning and see how it is forged.
Yeah, and as we kind of talked about, like, I like Tyson, like, having a place to belong, and now Percy's not alone in the Poseidon cabin. Like, I'm sorry, but that had to be creepy.
Yeah,
like,
probably.
It might be a little annoying having Tyson around all the time, but, like, it has to be nice to have someone to turn off the light when you're going to bed or whatever, you know, just someone else around.
Yeah.
So I did like that we got the introduction of Tyson's lineage and on all of that.
Right. Yeah. And just as I was applauding Percy for like all of the greatness in the last chapter, he was kind of horrible in this chapter. Now, I've thought about this a lot. And one, I'm very mad at him because he was being really mean to Tyson as well. However, he feels how he feels, and there's nothing wrong with how he feels if that's what it is, you know? And he has a lot that he's dealing with right now, so I kind of understand that pushback of like, oh, now I have a brother, or like when you have like a little sibling and you're like, oh, they follow me around everywhere and they're so annoying and like that kind of stuff. You mean it, but you don't mean it. And he still is sticking up for Tyson, which I like. But I think that this is also really interesting in terms of how the other campers see Cyclops. And I think the thing that really like sticks out to me is Annabeth's reaction, and she has her reasons and we'll get to that later, but she would have a reason to think the way that she thinks. And so Tyson's role right now in this book is very much about prejudice and how kids deal with that, and the fact that Percy isn't perfect, the fact that he has these feelings too and is trying to fight back against them, and that some of the other kids will also learn to think about Tyson differently, is a really, really good lesson to have in this book, even if it does make me mad at Percy for a little while.
Yeah. And as a person who had two little brothers that were really annoying, and I love them dearly, but they were really annoying when they were kids, I think I had no problem, like, falling into Percy's shoes here.
Yeah.
Like, He hasn't had a brother or anybody tagging along behind him ever. And so now to suddenly have Tyson, who doesn't necessarily need to be taken care of, but also doesn't know how anything works at Camp Half-Blood.
And definitely can't be left on his own with the other campers acting the way they are.
Right. So, like, he has to kind of take him along whenever he goes somewhere, or he has to make sure he's being taken care of, or, you know. And that's a lot of burden to put on his shoulders. And so I think it was easier for me just because I've had siblings and I know what that feels like.
I am an only child and I am the youngest cousin out of the main cousins. So I was the annoying little brother.
I have an older sister. Yeah. I was the annoying little sister. So I do have a bit of that too. Like, I remember what it felt like for her to be like, Mom, you know. So, you know, I definitely get a little bit of both sides too. Okay, so let's move on. We met Charles Beckendorf in the last chapter. Mm-hmm. In this one, we get introduced to Selena Beauregard.
Yeah.
Who is a daughter of Aphrodite and the Pegasus flight instructor.
Yeah, I thought that part was really cool. Also, Selena Beauregard is just, like, a really cool name. Right. I love that name.
It always makes me think of Willy Wonka, and I don't know why.
Oh, it makes me think of the Bobatons, right?
Bobaton. They say Bobaton. They say it as Bobaton in the movie, but I think it's supposed to be Bobaton because that's more French.
Yeah. Anyway, reminds me of Harry Potter. So
yeah,
that's which actually kind of fits because they're very beautiful and flowy and graceful, and I feel like a daughter of Aphrodite would be very similar.
For sure.
But she'd be wearing pink and not blue.
But yeah, but it was nice to meet her and kind of get an idea, and to also meet the Pegasus in general, like all of them.
Right.
Yeah. We got to kind of see Percy, you know, kind of experiencing Pegasus and learning that he can talk to them. And, all of that is all really
fun. I also really like the explanation of, like, there was one Pegasus, and that's the Pegasus. And then, you know, Pegasus had a lot of offspring, so they're also Pegasus, but not, like, the Pegasus. They're, like, lowercase letter Pegasus, and he's capital letter Pegasus.
But yet none of them have names. No one else decided to name
them. One will have name later on.
Yes, this
but
is true.
That's what I was thinking this whole time. And I was like,
just wait. But yeah, so that was fun. We get a little bit of what I like to call Team Persebeth.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are on the same team, literally, for the chariot race at first.
Yeah.
And then they have a bit of a tiff, and as they are want to do.
I was very excited for them to team up because, like you said, they would be unstoppable between the chariots and the horses and the strategy and all of that. Like, it wasn't meant to be.
And I love them, like, sitting on the beach, like, drawing up battle plans, like, drawing up drawing up chariot plans, just like she spent time doing in the first book. I love the idea of them kind of doing it together, and then they get into a fight.
I think this is good, though. We love the slow burn, Percy and Annabeth.
And so they go their separate ways, and each get a new partner, Percy's, which is Tyson, which is fun. Which leads me to the chariot race.
Mm-hmm.
And Percy chooses an interesting strategy, I think. Rather than, like, everyone else has weapons of some sort, whether it's, you know, Annabeth's partner, who I don't remember who they were, had a bow and arrow.
I don't think they named them. Yeah.
They had a bow and arrow. And Clarice, of course, has, like, weapons galore in her chariot. Percy just gives Tyson a really long stick. And is like, just push the rest of them away, and there's no way we can lose. Like, this would not have been my first thought from Percy. I don't know. I wouldn't have thought, he's going to go on the defensive rather than, here's Riptide.
Yeah.
Tyson, drive the chariot. And
I don't think he could trust Tyson to drive, was probably the main part.
And he didn't want to give Tyson a sharp stick, so he just gave him a stick and is like, here, just poke people.
Yeah.
Like,
No, just push them away. He was going to run a nice, clean game. I really liked all the descriptions of the different chariots. I thought they were really interesting. And, like, that is something that I would be very excited to see in the show, is how they, like, dress them all up and the weapons and how it kind of all played out. But I like that Percy was like, we're going to run a nice, clean game. We're just going to do what we need to do. I think he was also stressed about everything else, so
he didn't have a lot of time to come up with a whole strategy. So, I mean, it was effective, I will say. Like, it wasn't a bad plan, but it just interested me that he went on the defensive, and it's probably the best way he could have gone.
Yeah.
So, this chariot race, it gets pretty interesting pretty fast.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the Birdnado?
I don't want to talk about the Birdnado. I don't like birds.
No. Especially not even silver
mechanical ones. Especially not those. Probably those are at the top of my list. I had a bird land on my head when I was a young lass, and now I am actually, like, legitimately afraid of birds. I've gotten better over the years, but they make my palms sweat. Not a fan. And yes, I've seen the movie Birds, and it was fine.
That movie is just odd. It's
yeah,
not scary.
Yeah, it is. But the Birdnado, I would be gone. I would take my chariot, turn around, and run the other way outside of camp. Let the real world take me.
Into the beach, like into the water or something. Like
anywhere yeah. but the Birdnado.
Yeah. The Birdnado is pretty destructive.
It was
scary.
Intense.
It's an intense moment. But it kind of interrupts the chariot race.
It does.
And we find out. During the chariot race, Percy and Annabeth have a brilliant plan because they know, they identify where these birds came from. I don't remember what it was, and I'm not looking it up. There's
Stymphalian.
Yeah, I was going to say something
birds,
like that.
Yeah.
They figure it out, and they're like, we know their weakness. So they run to the big house to get Chiron's music because this will be what takes him down, and it works, and I love it.
So it was like Annabeth says he scared them away. Hercules scared him away with the most horrible sound he could, and apparently that sound is the equivalent to Dean Martin. That is so mean.
I mean,
I'm sure to a bunch of 12-year-olds that also sounds
right.
like horrible,
right?
But like, dang, way to do Dean Martin dirty, Rick.
I think when I was reading the chapter this time, I assumed that they were going to go get some, like, terrible classical music or something.
Yeah, or giant bells.
Screechy or something.
Yeah.
No, but I was a little shocked that they brought back Dean. But I also think it's funny that it's just Chiron's music. That will do it. Like, nothing we have, but definitely Chiron's boombox, which he so graciously left behind.
Yeah, kind of interesting. Can't take it out into the middle of the Everglades. It's going to get wet.
Right, and ruined, so we left it behind just for them.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they save the day, but while they're out saving the day, Clarice is limping across the finish line.
Yeah. I kind of like that she was the one that finished first. Like, I expected it to be Annabeth, and the fact that she was like, Clarice was like, no, I'm finishing this race.
Yeah.
It made me laugh, but it made sense.
I was going to say, yeah, it does kind of reflect Clarice's priorities.
Yeah.
Like, everybody else, oh, they're being saved. I'm going to win this race.
Win the race and then save everybody.
Right. I've got my priorities
yeah,
in order.
Then fight the Birdnado. We missed one important part of this chapter, prophecy count number 7.
We did.
Yeah.
Prophecy count number 7.
Yep. So Grover and Percy have their empathy link.
Yes.
And they have a little chat about Cyclops, Polyphemus, and some stuff that's maybe hidden there. And the reason why all of the satyrs go missing, because they're drawn to this area.
Yes.
A lot of interesting things happen chapter.
These two chapters were kind of packed full of
stuff. They were. And the one with the bulls, too, was just like, I feel like a lot's going on already.
Yeah.
But I thought that was really interesting. Of course, we get the visual of Grover in the wedding dress and all of that. It was a pretty cool dream / weird communications.
Vision. Yeah.
Yeah. We're still counting it as a prophecy.
It definitely counts. So, yes, that is 7 for the first 2 books.
Yeah,
so far. We're only 5 chapters, 6 chapters into the second book. So that's still quite a lot. Okay, so I think that pretty much wraps us up here. And that brings us to our favorite quotes. Karen, do you want to go first this time?
Sure. I chose Tyson because he said, "It is okay. I will be a good monster. Then you will not have to be mad." And he's just so caring and empathetic toward Percy, and he just wants to be a good person, and he doesn't want people to be mean to him, and he wants to make Percy happy. And I love him so much.
It does make you wonder, like, Cyclopses have gotten this rap for being, like, bloodthirsty and evil and mean. And Tyson is definitely not. Like, you meet him and you can just tell he's not. But because so many of his brethren have been that way, it makes you kind of wonder, like, how Tyson became who he is, like, what happened or what was different about how he came up that made right. him much more gentle. I mean, every creature has their, you know, good eggs and bad eggs, so mm-hmm. it might just be that, but it kind of makes you wonder. Like, I wonder if something's different about Tyson, but anyway, my favorite quote is, mine's from Percy. He's talking to the horses that yeah. they're about to use in this chariot race, and he says, I'll give you sugar cubes at the end of the race. And they go, sugar cubes? And he goes, very big sugar cubes. And apples. Did I mention the apples? I just love how he's, like, trying to distract them because they don't want to pull Tyson. And he's yeah. like, listen, you're going to pull Tyson. Like, I will feed you. Get the things.
I will yeah. bribe you.
Right? And it was just a really cute moment. So, yeah. All right. And then favorite moments. Karen, do you want to get yours?
Mine was the dryads and the satyrs singing to Talia's pine. I mean, whenever the music ended, the needles kind of drooped again, but I thought it was really nice that they were taking turns doing that, just doing the best they could, and it was kind of a very sad but also sweet moment, like a bittersweet moment, really, about that and the fact that Talia's pine is dying.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard that it's been poisoned, but getting a good idea, a good picture of exactly what that means was kind of nice. Like, to see that even the wood spirits are trying to bring it back to help the tree, but what they do is short-lived, and it does help, but it's a short stopgap. It's not a long-term solution.
Yeah.
So, my favorite moment is, like, we're very our moments are very touching for yes. this last one.
We were feeling a lot of emotions in this chapter. Because
mine is definitely Beckendorf taking Tyson under yeah. his wing and treating him like a person instead of the monster everyone else is yeah. immediately classifying Tyson as. And he takes him to the forge, which not only gives Tyson a purpose, which is going to give him something that he can do outside of Percy. So that's cool, because Percy can kind of get back to doing what he knows he needs to do. But it's also just Tyson has a friend, because mm-hmm. Charles Beckendorf has worked in the forges, and Cyclops' work in the forges with his dad, with Hephaestus. So he's used to it, and he knows these guys, and he knows that they're not all evil. And so he's more than happy to take Tyson off Percy's hands for a little while and to, you know, show him how to work the metal and all of that. And it makes me so happy.
Yeah, I am very quickly becoming number one Charles Beckendorf fan, so.
For sure.
Yeah.
And that wraps up our discussion of chapter 6.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! Moving right along. So next time will be chapters 7 and 8, so make sure to read those and get ready for next week. Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. Follow our website on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram at Subjectify Media, or visit us at SubjectifyMedia.com. We are home to 3 other podcasts, including Rewatchable, who just finished looking back at the Matrix movies in anticipation of the new one, which they will be discussing in its own episode sometime in the
soon-ish.
Near future.
Yeah.
So keep an eye out for that. Not About the Weather, which is a general interest show that sometimes features interviews with creators, and they just did an end-of-the-year episode for 2021 with all their hypes and gripes and all of that, so make sure to check that out. And then also Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, which was recently revived thanks to the upcoming Teen Wolf movie. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Twitter at Prophecy Podcast, or on Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at Prophecy Radio Podcast. Email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com if you've got lots of thoughts that you need to share as well. You can find us on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews really, really help other people find us, so that would be great. You can also leave us comments and questions on any of these places, and we'll keep an eye out for you. Or if you have ideas for content or discussions you would like us to have, feel free to send those our way. We do have some feedback this week.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll let Karen take this first one. Go ahead, Karen.
Yeah, so I tweeted out earlier this week that we were basically doing this episode and that we wanted to know which of your short stories and companion books were your favorite and everything. And Becky actually retweeted us first. I think she was the first one to. And she said, fun. My fave is Demigod Diaries because Haley's short story. Have been bugging him for more Alabaster for years. Hashtag moms. It was so cute.
That is really cute. I love it. The second one comes from Lily Allen at Nova_art. And she says, I can't scroll past this tweet without saying that Haley Riordan's short story in The Demigod Diaries still resonates with me to this day. That's just really sweet.
Yeah.
Gotta love it. Do you want to do the last one?
And then Annabeth Chase at Real Annabeth C says, I love The Demigod Diaries and I do wish there were more. So that's 3 for 3 for The Demigod Diaries.
I mean, they reign supreme,
apparently. Yeah. So that's cool. We'll definitely have to talk about those.
Definitely. For sure. Okay, so next week we will be talking about Dragon Pearl by Yoon-Ha Lee, plus the initiation from Cursed Carnival, which was kind of the intro story in there. So
yeah.
You can make sure to check that out too, which means I have to go read.
Yeah, it will be a kind of spoiler-free discussion. Once we get to the initiation at the end of that discussion, we'll obviously have to talk about the stuff that happens at the end of Dragon Pearl, so... Read it if you can.
Spoiler free-ish till the end.
Yeah, and then we have no choice but to talk about it because we'll be doing Tiger Honor after that. Spoiler for the podcast. And that's a sequel to Dragon Pearl, so
yeah,
we'll have to talk about some stuff.
So next week is Dragon Pearl and Chapters 7 and 8, so we will see you then. Until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio, signing off. Over and out.